Hello and welcome to the Out of Oscar podcast, where we chat about award season successes that didn't pick up Oscar nominations. This week's episode will cover 2008's Best Actress and Sally Hawkins in Happy Go Lucky. On the pod today is Christoph. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And if you just like to quickly introduce yourself, perhaps introduce your interest in the Oscars and maybe best actress performances.
Well, I have been interested in the Oscars, I could probably say for decades already. And from the categories, best actress is always maybe the most interesting categories, or maybe the one that has the most beautiful winners and most beautiful nominations among them. Certainly not as boring as some other categories tend to be sometimes. So this is why I'm quite happy to talk about a best actress lineup, even if it might not be the greatest best actress lineup of all time.
Yes. So you mentioned before the recording that you like the performances, but not the films.
Yes. I mean, I've been, when I just saw the lineup, and I don't really love any of these movies, and the film that I'm probably like most is Doubt, and I don't think anyone is really excited about Doubt, even although it's certainly a good film. I think this is a year which had a lot of exciting options that weren't nominated in the end, not just Happy Go Lucky, also Tilda Swinton and Julia was in the mix, or Kristen Scott Thomas and I've Loved You So Long, which would probably be much better or more interesting nominations as some of the ones we're going to talk about. But still, the performance are all, there isn't a bad performance there. It's just maybe not, it could have been more exciting, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we always talk about with Best Actress where the films tend to be of lesser critical acclaim, to put it nicely, of this reflection of like a weak best actress year, but then it all comes down to the films that the Academy chose. I mean, I covered 1994 recently, and that's probably a really good example of that. But how you mentioned, 2008 definitely goes further than Hawkins in Happy Go Lucky and what the Academy ultimately settled on. But I'll just quickly introduce just the Academy's five nominees, and then we can sort of go from top to bottom, Hawkins, and then alphabetically going through, I guess, the Academy's nominees. The Academy's five nominees were Anne Hathaway in Rachel Getting Married, Angelina Jolie in Changeling, Melissa Leo in Frozen River, Meryl Streep in Doubt, and the winner was Kate Winslet in The Reader. And now I only realized this when I was writing that sentence a couple of days ago, that they're all Oscar winners now. So
yes,
it really worked
right
out for them in the end.
Very much so. It's a lineup of winners, and but still a lineup where they weren't all winners at the time when they were nominated.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't think that Anne Hathaway would, if you would have told me in 2008 that 4 years later Anne Hathaway would win for the movie adaptation of Les Miserables, I would not be able to connect the dots.
I think, back then in 2008, it felt very much like the nomination for Anne Hathaway was a welcome to the club. And there was a certain feeling that Anne Hathaway would win an Oscar down the line, because I think that was the main reason she wasn't really a front runner to win, because many people thought she will win at some point in the next 4 years. So that was how I thought about that.
Mm-hmm. And the one I'm most interested to talk about is Melissa Leo in Frozen River, because it's an independent film. And I always find that interesting when lead performances in independent films can pick up Oscar nominations. It helps to be an American indie. Happy Go Lucky is a British indie. So I think there's one example we can give of why it wasn't nominated, or perhaps fell out of the Academy's radar. It exists in the British independent scene, which is probably a bit harder for it to pick up traction. But even so, Hawkins wins the Globe, the National Society of Film Critics, the New York Film Critics Circle, and the Los Angeles Film Critics Circle awards for her portrayal as Poppy.
And, And it's a film directed by Mike Lee. And Mike Lee has some Oscar nominations under his belt, also for his actresses in the past. I mean, he made Secrets and Lies and he made Vera Drake, which have been very popular with the Academy. Topsy-Turvy, which has been very popular with the Academy. So it looked like she would have had a good chance to actually get into the nominations, especially with all the critical support she was having.
Yeah, and to see that trio of National, New York, and LA, I feel like that's a hard feat to pull off. I don't know how many how many performers you have that have sort of hit all three of them. But then I always view that as like critics getting behind a performance, which is far removed from the industry getting behind the performance. And it's that disconnect, which is a bit disappointing in the long run. But, you know, you can sense why critics would want to support a Mike Lee performance. They tend to love his work.
Yeah, but it's right that often the critic's darling isn't what wins the Oscar at the end. But usually when critics really rally behind a performance, they at least have a good shot at a nomination at the end. And it's kind of sad that it didn't materialize for Sally Hawkins, because without taking anything away, this performance by Sally Hawkins, I would prefer over all five that have actually been nominated at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. And it's really a beautiful performance. It's quite unusual, and it's really not the kind of performance that usually wins Oscars, because her character is very unusual. We're probably going to talk about that. But it would have been refreshing and different to see her nominated, at least nominated at the Oscars.
Yeah, and she would get her first Oscar nomination 5 years after the fact. I think for Blue Jasmine, which is a very solid performance. I think she's actually great in that film. Lupita Nyong'o is hard to beat, but I do love her in Blue Jasmine.
I forgot she was nominated for Blue Jasmine. I just have it as such a Kate Blanchett vehicle in my head. If you had asked me, I would have said her only nomination was for Shape of Water. But yeah, I think she was nominated for Blue Jasmine, now that you say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, supporting actress. I thought she was great in that film. I think she's a different type of neurotic. Cate Blanchett's doing like her own version of neurosis, but yes. Yeah, I think she's really good in that. And she's also really good here. Poppy is the name of her character. I was trying to find a good adjective to describe her. I think optimistic is just a good way to put it.
Well, happy-go-lucky, the title puts it very well.
I think that's how I was like, do I describe Poppy as happy-go-lucky? I guess she is at the end of the day. And then you sort of see her, it's kind of like following her life just generally, like it's the romantic relationships, it's the friendships, it's the sisterhood, and then you also get an idea of her work life and her interactions with her driving instructor, who's just generally one of the most awful people ever. But in the end, in very Mike Lee fashion, reveals a lot about each of their characters. She's very cheerful, and she's perhaps a bit grating sometimes, but I think that just like adds to her charm.
She is such a cheerful person, and unlike many other cheerful persons in film, she is not naive. She is not stupid. It's almost as if she decides to be upbeat most of the time. And it's also not like, say, Emily, where she exists to make other people happy. She is happy to be happy herself, and she doesn't really care what other people think of her. She's just living her life, and she doesn't want to change. And what I actually like about the film is the film doesn't want her to change, and the film doesn't want to change her. At the end of the film, she's still very much the same person as she is at the beginning, and it's good that she's still the person. She is showing different sides of her personality throughout the film, but it's not like she's fundamentally changing and suddenly realizing that she should be more responsible or whatever. She remains the person that she is. And the film basically tells us that it's good that she is the way she is. And that's what I like about it. This is not, in that sense, a journey of growth. It's more a journey where she shows that she is more than just this simple-minded, happy thing that we believe her to be at the beginning, because we see her responsible in her job, how she deals, she's a school teacher, how she deals with the children. We see almost a kind of emotional intelligence inside her, how she reacts when, for example, she has an encounter with a sister where her sister is almost nasty to her and telling her that she should change. And she reacts rather naturally towards that. And her sister almost behaves as if she was attacking her and as if it wouldn't be the other way around. Also, the way she handles Scott, the driving teacher, the driving instructor, who is an asshole and keeps, and the more we get to know him, the more awful it becomes. He's spouting conspiracy theories, and she reacts to that in an interesting way, because she starts to ask him questions like, were you bullied at school? Were you an only child? Where she tries to find out why he is the way he is. And so the way she is handling other people and the way she is handling adversity shows that she's not just a superficial, cheerful person who goes alive and doesn't even realize what's happening around her, but it's just the way she is. She's an optimistic person and she wants to be that way.
Yeah. And I think she sort of reveals that, you know, she can be optimistic and as long as it has like an effect on other people, but how you mentioned, she does live for herself at the end of the day, as many people do. It makes for like a fairly interesting protagonist, but I also just like how Mike Lee shows us fairly early on and how Sally Hawkins reacts to these situations that she does experience life like everyone else. She deals with a rude or an aloof shopkeeper in a bookstore. Her bike is stolen. She deals with the advances of Scott in a fairly powerful scene that plays out quite late in the film, but it's actually the scene that I watched first, just out of context, removed from this film. So I knew that it was going to go there. It was going to, you know, move past how what could easily have been like a one note performance. Like it ends up showing itself as something deeper, and something that can be quite challenging material.
Yeah, it's also her entire characterization, her body language and the way she moves and the way she walks. There's a scene where she is doing a flamenco lesson with her best friend, and her friend points out that she still has sunglasses in her hair, which is probably a problem because they might fall off. And so I would say maybe a normal person would just discreetly take the sunglasses off and put them to the side. She does it in the way that draws most attention to her, almost hopping or jumping loudly to the side of the room and then hopping back in an exaggerated way that the dancing instructor is really annoyed at her. And also the way she dresses it, she's always dressed in a very colorful way. She wears a lot of accessories.
The bangles.
In some, yes, the bangles. The bangles.
So many times, yeah.
especially in the scenes with the driving instructor, somehow the bangles are most notable. You hear them all the time. Maybe because it's an enclosed space, you hear it even more. It's just all a part of her character, these accessories that she has. And in some scenes, she can be a bit grating, but most of the time, it's just very endearing to see her that way.
Mm-hmm. And also just in those scenes, especially with the driving instructor, I feel like it's a very word heavy script. I don't know how much of this is improvised, but you would think that some of it is, in that how natural Hawkins just says these lines. She just plays off people's just general negativity and cynicism like quite well, almost as if she's in character as Poppy herself. But it also made me think that, you know, Sally Hawkins is perfect casting for this. The Sally Hawkins that we know, like from, Paddington, I suppose, Paddington and Paddington 2. Even to think of like her more prestigious films, like there's just vulnerability to her that makes her quite charming. Yeah,
I mean, the final confrontation with the driving instructor, we see her being genuinely scared by him, where he's redheaded, screaming at her, that saying she just wanted to reel him in, where he is almost salivating and drooling and spitting as he is more and more enraged. And she, you see her trying to figure out how to calm him down, and she manages to get him calm without really changing character, but you see her getting serious like she does at only few points in the film. There's another where she's dealing with a bullying child and gets help from a social worker to find out what drives this boy to be a bully. These are the moments in the film where you see that this is not just someone whose head is in the clouds and who just goes away, but who is actually responsible and knows how to do the right thing if she has to.
But I have to wonder, Mike Lee, why he made a film that is optimistic and then at the end of the day doesn't have anything negative to say about its character. It's almost like relating to the character that he's writing. I mean, compared to some of these other films, which they're not necessarily like bleak or depressing, but they can be. And I think about the male version of Sally Hawkins in Happy-Go-Lucky on the best actor side of things is Mike Lee in Naked in 1993. Mike Lee, David Thewlis in Naked in 1993. Another Mike Lee film. And that's on a completely different side of the spectrum of things.
Yeah, it should have been. It really should have been.
Mm-hmm. For the 5 nominated performances, when we have Hathaway, Jolie, Leo, Streep, and Winslet, I mentioned Melissa Leo being in an independent film, albeit an American one, which makes your Oscar chances more likely, I suppose. Which one of these performances sticks out for you the most, or the least, if you want to start on the least side of things?
I think we should save Kate Winslet for last, because she actually won, and there's quite some interesting things about her, both the way she got nominated mm-hmm. and about the film itself. As for the others, I think we maybe just could go in alphabetical order, as you suggested at the beginning.
Yeah, start with Anne Hathaway. Actually won the Critics' Choice Award for this performance in a Jonathan Demme film, Rachel Getting Married. It would have been an Anne Hathaway that I suppose audiences weren't entirely familiar with. This is 2 years removed from Devil Wears Prada. She's playing the stoic and raw Kim Buchanan, who's released from rehab to attend her older sister's wedding. For the film, it's a good thing that you mentioned this at the top of the episode. The film itself is not something that I can entirely get behind. I think it's shrouded in bad stylistic choices, the shaky cam, the whip zooms, just all of Demi's just inflections that don't really add much to the film. But I love Anne Hathaway in this, and I also love Rosemary DeWitt. I think she is underrated so far as this film goes.
I mean, the performance is really great because the character she is playing is not a character we're predisposed to root for. This could very easily have been a grating, annoying brat, an attention seeker who's just drawing the attention from everyone. She could have easily been a cliched recovering addict. But I think she finds the good notes to play this. As you said, I don't think the film around her is really supporting her a lot, as it's especially the shaky cam that I found quite off-putting. It felt to me so much like Demi was trying to do a Dogma film like The mm-hmm. Celebration from the 1990s, which has a lot of similarities. It's also about a family gathering that goes quite all right, even for quite different reasons. And it just, on the one hand, the image quality is a lot better, but the shaky cam is always there. And it really, I found it hard to concentrate on the film because that part really put me off. Anne Hathaway is, for me, easily the biggest draw of the film. Her performance is compelling for a character that is not necessarily one we would normally gravitate towards. She finds different notes to play, and I always found her interesting, and she was very much the best thing about this film for me.
Yeah, and when you have a black sheep in the family, it's you want to root for their fact, but then there's also a fact that Demi gives you about halfway through that perhaps changes your perception on her. when you learn why she is in rehab, why she doesn't connect with her family at all. And that the way Anne Hathaway grapples with that as well is makes it a quite satisfying performance, because, well, to give away, I guess, what the reveal is, she has killed her younger brother, Ethan, in a car accident when she was high. And that's why she is in rehab. And she actually isn't. And also just Rachel's pregnancy reveal and Kim's reaction to that. You can't do that when I'm arguing. Like, you can't like trump my dissatisfaction with your big reveal. It's a quite a relatable character, you know, aside from the circumstance that she's actually in. But the way she's quite blunt with her family is sort of refreshing. You mentioned Celebration, and I know people always draw that parallel, but then it also reminded me a bit of Pieces of April from 2003, that sort of dry, dark humor around a family gathering.
I've watched Pieces of April only once ages ago, and I absolutely hated everything about it. Rachel Getting Married is, at least for me, certainly better film than Pieces of April. What you just mentioned is probably is part of the problem for me with I think Rachel Getting Married crams quite a lot of problems in that. I think I could have done take one thing out, take the pregnancy out, maybe. It's just it just feels like it needlessly escalates it even more, and which also kind of made me wonder how serious I'm still taking it, if it's just a bit too much. But it's never the problem with Anne Hathaway, because Anne Hathaway navigates it greatly, and she even although I at times maybe lost interest in the film, I never lost interest in her.
I think it's a solid first Oscar nomination, like you mentioned, a Welcome to the Club nomination. We love those. So the Critics' Choice is a good honor for her at the time. She does tie it. She does tie with Streep for it.
The Devil Wears Prada and Brokeback Mountain, very much a way to break away from her Princess Diary fame that she had at that point, and quite basically showing that she is a serious actress and gunning for the serious actress parts. And it was just the next progression in her career trajectory, basically being the lead of a quote-unquote serious film.
Yeah, I always forget she's in Brokeback Mountain. There's a sort of funny thing with Angelina Jolie when I was writing this up. She only won for Girl Interrupted like less than 10 years before. But yeah, she's nominated in lead this time. So she won for supporting actress for Girl Interrupted. And she's playing Christine Collins, who takes on the LAPD after her son goes missing in Clint Eastwood's Changeling.
Yeah, I think that there's a great movie somewhere inside Changeling, but it's not the version that we get, because my impression is that Clint Eastwood crams a lot of different topics into this film. It's misogyny, it's violence, it's mental institutions, all in the 1920s. It's at some point it decides that it's suddenly a courtroom drama at the moment. Watching this, I thought, pick two of those and make a film around that. Angelina Jolie is doing her best, and she's playing it like an Oscar vehicle, even although the actual film doesn't really do her many favors. Quite often she's wearing hats that obscure half her face. She's in the shadows very often. In the second half of the film, she doesn't really get to do a lot except crying. At the very beginning, I had some problems accepting her and this character, because there was a bit too much movie star charisma or star power emanating from her character. It took a while for me, but when she soon gets into the role, and there's a lot of time in the first half of the film after the very beginning, I think she's really great. I just think that Clint Eastwood isn't doing her any favors in the way he's directing the film.
She's tapping into big emotions, and I think she does tap into them successfully. And she does assume motherhood, at least by a character's standards, quite naturally. She's, of course, a mother in real life. For the most part, I was viewing this as Angelina Jolie. She doesn't quite slip into the character of Christine Collins, who is in this terrible situation. This film really does try to tackle every subject under the sun. It also goes through so many characters. It introduces characters quite late into the story. There's also one thing that I'd like to mention. Another topic that it likes to tackle is Oscar prognostication. Because she is predicting It Happened One Night to win Best Picture over Cleopatra in a scene that really just did not add anything to the film, aside from it being directed by a movie lover.
If the film would have concentrated a bit more on the Angelina Jolie character and would have given her a bit more room, this could have been even better performance. Although I still like what Angelina Jolie does with what little she has.
And changing course a little bit from well-established director to Courtney Hunt, who directed Frozen River, a filmmaker you don't often hear about, but she's directed Melissa Leo to an Indie Spirit Award win for her performance as Ray, who earns her living smuggling immigrants from Canada to the US in Frozen River, the first film I watched from the Academy's nominations. It was quite some time ago. I don't know why I settled on this film. I must have known Melissa Leo from her recent win for The Fighter and then seeked out this film.
To be honest, it's probably from this entire lineup the one I have the least to say about, because it's a typical 2000s American independent movie in the way that it is a drama centered around a character and seems mainly intent to depress the audience. It's the kind of film that are hard to really find fault with, but they just are never really surprising to watch. Yeah, certainly never fun to watch. You know what you're going to get once you enter them. There's not really much surprise in the character journey. I think Melissa Leo doesn't get very much to do in the film except look sad. I personally think that Misty Upham is stealing the film away from her, and in a way that it made me wish that the film was really more about the Misty Upham character. And to be quite honest, while I was rewatching this, I found my mind wandering a lot more than with any of the other films. Melissa Leo is certainly doing some good work here. It's just that this kind of film is that is mainly bleak is just not really something that interests me all too much.
Yeah, and as good as Leo is in this film, because I still think she does give a good performance. With these American indies, it sort of feels like the Academy wants to award a character who contextualizes these very American issues on the topic of immigration, especially between borders and this perhaps trafficking that's going on, and also just her economy. It's coming out around the Great Recession time. So it's also speaking about America's current economy and people who live below or near the poverty line. But just even rewatching clips of the film, I once again like inform myself of just the film's broader story. It doesn't necessarily need a rewatch.
It's a film I wish I would like more, because the intentions behind it are certainly good, but there's just nothing about it that makes it exceptional for me, except maybe Misty Upham, who's really good.
I feel like the next performance in this list before Kate Winslet is one that I just actually adore, but it's also because it's from Meryl Streep, who is quite easy to adore. She receives her 15th Oscar nomination at the time for Doubt, a film that picks up 4 acting nominations. Streep plays Sister Aloysius, the leader of a Catholic school who investigates a father for essentially suspicious behavior. Like I mentioned, it received 4 acting nominations for Streep, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Viola Davis, and Amy Adams. And Streep tied the Critics' Choice Award with Hathaway and won the SAG. So she has both critic support and then the support of her fellow peers. I feel like that's an actor's dream. I've mentioned this when I was with Fritz. If you're playing a nun, nominations are staring you in the face.
Just one thing what you said, that if you're playing a nun, you're staring a nomination in the face. I think it helps that a nun's habit really forces you to concentrate on the actress's face, because you don't see her hair, you don't see much of her body. So whatever she does with her face is the one you are concentrating on. And Meryl Streep is probably my favorite of the performances in the film, because on paper, her character should actually be the most interesting. Sort of evolves over the course of the film, where she suddenly is the character we're rooting for, because we share the suspicion that Philip Seymour Hoffman did something illegal with a kid. But then at the end, she has this breakdown scene when she reveals herself that she has doubts and doesn't know whether what she was doing was the right thing. Although she was very fiercely fighting against Philip Seymour Hoffman. So this entire arc, which although her character changes at least twice, the way she behaves changes at least twice, it's still one cohesive performance, and you root for her, and you feel with her at the end when she just reveals that she just has no idea whether what she did was the right thing. And so her character, which is almost more of an antagonist as a protagonist, is the one that we end up identifying with. She's Meryl Streep. She's great. We don't have to explain that Meryl Streep is one of the greatest movie actresses that we ever had. She just tackles this character and makes it her own. And it's just amazing to watch her do that. This is truly a great performance. It's a very good film.
I think, well, the film, although it's, you know, titled Doubt, it's also bookended by doubt. The father delivers a sermon on what's essentially doubt in the unifying nature of faith and whatnot. And then also you have Sister Aloysius's breakdown on the park bench. You know, there's something, an inner breakdown based on trust with her own issues and her own perspective on the situation. And it's quite a disarming moment, because she's so hardened and so headstrong and so sure on her position the entire film, that it kind of leaves you with an interesting feeling. For a film, for a play that absolutely works, most plays end with a monologue on that nature that disrupts your interpretation of the play and leaves you to think about something for the ride home or the next couple of days. But for a film, it's quite a strong feeling to be left with, and especially how powerfully Streep plays it. And she's just framed in so many close-ups. It's such an intimate performance. The headpiece is what makes you focus on her face, and the face is communicating everything. You can see her calculating, living the experiences as they come, which is a sign of a great actress or a great actor. And Streep is absolutely in that category. Do you think she should have won for 2008? I feel like we're not going to end this episode with raves about The Reader.
Well, out of the five performances, I would be torn between her and Hathaway. I would probably even give it to Hathaway. Although my personal dream lineup would certainly be Sally Hawkins. It would certainly be Kristin Scott Thomas. It would certainly be Tilda Swinton. Maybe Kate Winslet, but not for this film. I think the other three would either be Kate Winslet for her other performance that she was in the running, Meryl Streep, and then Hathaway. Out of these three, it would be the other two nominations.
Right. So the other film in contention, you mean Revolutionary Road?
Revolutionary Road, yes.
Yeah. How did that not come to be in terms of Oscar?
And I think she was campaigning for Revolutionary Road in lead and for The Reader in supporting. And the Academy voters just gave her, and apparently you can't be nominated against yourself in the same category. So you can only get in for one of the nominations. And that was why she was running in both categories at the same time, because apparently the goal was to get her the double nomination. But she got more votes in lead for the Reader than she did in for the Revolutionary Road. So she bumped Revolutionary Road off, and she probably would have gotten the supporting nomination as well. But as you can get the only nominated only one of those, you get the nomination in the category where you get more votes or where you get in sooner. She basically got a bit of a surprisingly nominated for the Reader in lead. So she bumped out Revolutionary Road in lead, and she bumped out the Reader in supporting and got only this one nomination. But it certainly worked out in the end for her, because she kept winning all over the place, mostly in supporting, sometimes in lead for the Reader. It was clearly Kate Winslet's year, and it was very clear that this is the time we give her the Oscar, because it was also very clear that she really, really wants it. And while sometimes the Academy seems to punish people who really, really want it a lot, see Glenn Close, sometimes they give it to her, like in this case.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was perhaps a bit of an overdue narrative with Winslet, even though it was only 13 years after she had received her first nomination for Sense and Sensibility. And even so, she has been nominated since. So it was like 2008 accumulated into Kate Winslet's year. And it's such an interesting thing. I think it's just two major films that she had out.
Yes, and she was getting nominations at quite a high speed. I think she was the youngest person to have, I don't know, 4, 5, and 6 Oscar nominations or Best Actress nominations, something like that. So it was very clear that she is collecting Oscar nominations at quite a high speed at quite a young age. So there was an urge to reward her. And maybe there was also some and many of her nominations are very well beloved still years after. I mean, she was in Titanic. I think her somewhat offbeat nomination for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind had a lot of admirers. And so it's just the nominations showed a certain range that she was having. And so that's how, in the end, she got it for this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to talk about the Ricky Gervais joke with
extras. Oh yeah, you always can. Although there's a little bit of a twist. Like in Extras, Ricky Gervais's show, Kate Winslet is playing an actress who is a nun who is shielding either Jews or just victims of the Nazi regime from the Holocaust. But in this situation, she's playing a Nazi guard who's on trial. So
yes, and in the Ricky in Extras, she was playing herself, and Ricky Gervais was playing an extra. Going to, oh, it's great that you're doing this to highlight how terrible the Holocaust was. And she, as Kate Winslet, says, "Oh no, I'm just doing this to win an Oscar," because I found out that if you play in movies about the Holocaust, you win an Oscar. This
and
was,
he calls,
I think,
it up
2 years,
like the Golden Globes as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the final punchline of the episode is she sees another character of the film who has cerebral palsy, and she just says, "Or I could play someone disabled. You also win an Oscar for that." So basically, she in the episode, she played herself as an actress who desperately wants to win an Oscar, and so the fact that she wins an Oscar for a Holocaust-related film is sort of the final punchline of that Ricky Gervais Extras episode.
Yeah, it's obviously such a great satire on actors and their want for awards and this the roles that they'll take up. But then, when questioned about it, you know, I think Winslet said herself she did make the connection. While making this movie, what it may appear to be. But then she also said, well, that wasn't the reason. I was drawn to this because it's a weird kind of love story.
Yeah, well, it is an adaptation of a very highly regarded novel. So the novel was very popular and very acclaimed. So it is an interest on the face of it, it's an interesting character that she gets to play. So I could see that even beyond the hunger for awards. It's something why an actress would want to play that character.
Yeah, and it's the prestigious sort of film that can perhaps be the mix of like an art film and like commercial fare. And it's, I can totally understand why she would be drawn to this. And even Revolutionary Road, a similar sort of context of a well-regarded novel being adapted into a prestigious drama. The Globes, the Critics' Choice, and the SAG is where she won for supporting. So she was in supporting for most of the season. But then the BAFTAs and the Oscars give her leading actress wins. It's a very strange film. It would not survive Twitter nowadays. I think we just...
Never.
It absolutely would not. So it starts with Hannah Schmitz helping a teenager who is sick on a tram in West Germany. It's 1950s. They start a relationship. He reads for her. She's illiterate, who we find that out later in the film. And then a decade later, once she disappears, he sees her again when she's on trial for being a Nazi guard during World War II. He's in law school, so I guess he's just observing the trial. And then in the 1990s, Ralph Fiennes is playing the teenager grown up, and she is just in old age makeup, and then they meet.
It's a strange performance because maybe it's a strange... I understand the category confusion, why she was sometimes in lead and sometimes in supporting, because she is the most interesting character, and she is the character whose life story is dictating what this film is about. But in another sense, the film is not really about her. The film is about the kid who is played by David Cross throughout the most time, and by Ralph Fiennes when he's older, because he is the one observing her. He is the one who just at the beginning gets to know her as this woman he is having, let's just say, an affair with, although he's 15 and she's in her 30s, and then later sees her again and tries to grasp, somehow tries to find a way to bring this woman he was maybe in love with or maybe had a crush on when he was a teenager, trying to understand that this is the woman who did this crime of being a Nazi prison guard. So the film is not really about Hannah Schmitz. It's not really about the Nazi. It's about the generation coming after it, coming to terms with people they have been looking up to when they were younger, suddenly finding out what they did in the Third Reich. And this is really what the reader is about. So the film never really cares about the fact that this grown-up woman has sex with a 15-year-old boy. She's not really falling in love with him. It's more like her getting infatuated with him. Coming back to Kate Winslet, I think it's in these early scenes when I find her character the most interesting, where she is still hiding basically everything from this kid and how she's seducing him, and not just seducing him to have sex with him, but also seducing him to get him to read to her. The more the film goes on, the less interesting her character or character arc becomes.
My biggest problem with the Hannah Schmitz character is how they sexualize and also glamorize her. The film doesn't give us enough meat to chew on. It's a very thinly laid film. Even just like the first half an hour with the endless montages of sex and reading with the affair that we never really justify. Even, I mean, she does in the novel, she seduces him so she can hear him read, and she seduces him because she has power over him. And that's explored much more in the novel, which does have this intensity that the film never really has. The film's much more interested in being this polished Oscar vehicle. Stephen Daldry, a filmmaker who, I mean, I think he's a decent filmmaker, but he's not the grittiest filmmaker. And then you have it's heavily scored, so it has this romantic, lush sort of feeling that is always at odds with the subject matter. And then Roger Deakins and his co-cinematographer have shot it really beautifully. So it's ultimately a polished film, but one that has a quite dirty interior, if you will. And I think on a performance basis, I don't think what Kate Winslet is doing is particularly great. Like I mentioned, a lot of it is just facial expressions. Like I feel like there's always like a raised eyebrow or a crunched forehead. And I don't know what that's really communicating about the character. But yeah, as a whole, the whole lead or supporting thing is an interesting discussion to have, because she's in the film for roughly a third of it. For context, most of the, well, actually every other nominee in that category is in at least 50% of their film. So what makes it, I think it's a perspective thing as well, but then also just being Kate Winslet, the billing of that was easier to nominate her in lead. Would she have won in supporting? Probably, but I'm kind of glad Penelope Cruz did.
Yeah, I mean, she's been winning supporting all over the place everywhere, but I'm happy with Academy Award winner Penelope Cruz, so...
Mm-hmm. it's hard to argue against. And also Academy Award winner Kate Winslet. I'm happy with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we can pretend she won for Revolutionary Road instead. I mean, yes, I understand that you say how you have a problem with sexualizing a Nazi prison guard. I think the way to explain it is really to see that it is not about her, but about this kid who realizes that the woman he had a crush on and had sex with had this entire backstory and did this when... was a Nazi and was a Nazi prison guard. Mm-hmm. So maybe just the surprise effect of that, if you just go in knowing that she's a Nazi prison guard, it gets, from the beginning, it gets an entire different texture right away. Absolutely. So this is the problem.
If you said Revolutionary Road, but I would have loved to see her win for Sense and Sensibility or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
But Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind was an all-timer lineup. It was also Vera Drake and Maria, mm-hmm, Full of Grace. So it was that was one of, I would say that it's one of the best lineups in the history of the category. So it's just bad luck if you're nominated there with an absolutely great performance, because you, mm-hmm, are facing a bunch of absolutely great performances in that lineup. Whereas this particular lineup, doesn't really have that many all-timers, because as we said, some of the more interesting performances that could have been there didn't get the nomination.
The format of Best Actress that year, the ceremony, where it's like you had veterans of the screen introducing and speaking quite well on behalf of the nominees, it would have just been really... great to see what they would have said for Sally Hawkins in that, yes, situation, especially in the company that she was keeping that night alongside Streep and Winslet, who I'm sure would have still been nominated had Hawkins slipped through. It would have been quite a great moment for an actress who I often find is underrated.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I almost loved it more when one year later they didn't have veterans who previously won the category, but veterans who had previously worked for the nominee before, which gave it even, mm-hmm, an extra bit of interest to see that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. In out of Oscar tradition, if Hawkins is getting your vote for nominations for 2008, which I assume she is.
Yes.
Who are you removing from the Academy's lineup?
Probably Melissa Leo. Melissa Leo or Angelina Jolie, but these are the two closest to the chopping block for me.
Mm-hmm. I would probably remove Melissa Leo, or I don't know. I think Angelina Jolie is definitely showboating a lot in her performance, so there's a bit of an insincere element to it. I feel like Melissa Leo's I don't know, actually. I think probably, actually, you know what? Yeah, probably Jolie. Although we just talked like crap about Kate Winslet for ages, but she's it feels wrong to remove the winner.
Also, I still like what you did in the first half of the film. I mean, it's and I think she has more interesting things to do than Melissa Leo has in the entirety of the film.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think Melissa Leo is unfortunately getting the boot. Although, bonus question, and it's okay if you can't answer this, if Kate Winslet's nominated in supporting, who are you removing from the supporting lineup to make room for her?
Well, I'm not removing Marissa Tomei. I'm not removing Viola Davis. I'm definitely not removing Penelope Cruz. So it's Taraji P. Henson or Amy Adams. I haven't seen The Curious Case of Benjamin Button in a long, long time, and I don't really have an urge to revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would probably remove Taraji P. Henson, although I'm feeling kind of bad for doing it because I generally like Taraji P. Henson. But I would have to say, if she's getting in supporting, it's probably Taraji P. Henson.
Yeah, that's I guess that's a wrap on 2008 Best Actress. And Sally Hawkins in Happy-Go-Lucky, a film that I'd absolutely recommend. And well written, well acted. And if you love Sally Hawkins, which you should, a great performance from her. And where can people find you, Christoph? Where can they find your other podcast guests?
I don't have a podcast of my own, and I'm not going to start one because it seems like much of a hassle to do this every week.
So you do it every 2 weeks like me.
That sounds like a good idea too. You can find me on Twitter at Judge Roy Snyder. I'm on Letterboxd and Christoph N. I'm also on Sporkle, where I'm Mr. Whiplash, your curator for the actor and German subcategories. And I'm releasing a new quiz every week. I just recently finished my best screenplay series, and a new series is coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm. I love Sporkle and I love some trivia, so I'm on it. Out of Oscar Podcast, you can find wherever you listen to your podcasts, on Twitter at Out of Oscar Pod, and from there you can find my personal Twitter. Episodes released every 2 weeks. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.